This is episode 289 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
It's going to be a really difficult show for me, Brandon.
Oh?
I was coming into this thinking that I was going to make myself a promise that I wasn't going to make any chance puns, and we'll see how well that goes for me. But that's my goal through this podcast, is to not make any puns regarding the word chance.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
An offensive lineman.
Considering one of our new signings. So,
I know.
We're going to see how that goes. For me, this has been a really good week. The whole start to my week, it kicked off really well. I was looking through my house for a pair of shoes, and I found a bin that was, you know, where we put the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I opened it up, and there were 8 rolls of toilet paper just randomly in a bin.
Wait, you found gold bars in a bin?
I had no idea when I put them there that they were going to be worth something later on.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, man. That's some real prepper stuff right there.
It really gave me a boost to the start of my week.
I bet it did. I mean, that's basically like finding dollar bills.
I know. Well, I put it up on Facebook and I asked people, is this the new version of like finding a pair of pants, like an old pair of pants that you haven't worn, and reaching in the pocket and finding a $5 bill? Is this the new version of that?
It's the new version of doing that, but pulling out a Benjamin. Good for you, man. I'm very happy about your new toilet paper find. That's amazing.
Big start to the week.
Yeah.
Well, the Seahawks have made some big moves that may be more consequential to people's lives than me having a couple of extra rolls of toilet paper. But we have some things to talk about with regards to the Seahawks and free agency, Adam. I feel like things have been a little bit more active than in past years, and that's a good thing.
It certainly feels that way, right? I didn't go back and compare the amount of activity this year to years previous, but it does feel like it is a bit more. But it does also feel like a type of free agency that John Schneider usually participates in, right? It's the same sort of guys that they're bringing in. The high upside with low cost type guys.
Well, and they don't have a ton of salary cap space. And with Jadeveon Clowney still unsigned, we don't know his status yet. So that's going to be something that they're going to want to wait on.
Yeah, let's start there. Let's start with the Clowney news, or lack of news.
Sure.
I do find it very interesting, because my first question, Brandon, and maybe you can answer this for me, does Clowney's leverage go up or down the longer that he waits?
I think it kind of depends on how long he waits and when, because if he waits really long and he waits until, I don't know, August, and doesn't have to participate in training camp, and then can wait for a big injury maybe, then when there is more demand one way or another. I think that's part of the thing that we're wondering now that it's gone on over a week into free agency, is just how long could it go on? Because there's going to be teams that tend to wait out free agency because of the whole comp pick formula. You know, the Patriots are one of those teams. And so they might look at it as something that once they don't have to worry about lose a third round pick in a 2021 draft, that maybe they would budget a little extra money for, or if they have a significant injury. And I think because one of the things that you were asking last week that kind of stumped me a little bit is just how the coronavirus would have an impact on the NFL. This might be one of those moves that's having that impact, because as it's been pointed out by the NFL with the concerns about it, NFL teams aren't allowed to meet with players at their facilities or any other locations. So he's a guy that he's had the microfracture surgery on his knee. He had the core injury last season that he had to get surgery on. So I think there's probably some medical issues that a lot of teams are going to want to check out before they pay him upwards of, you know, the big numbers that he's looking for.
Yeah, maybe other teams. To me, it doesn't make any sense to hold out as long as he is in terms of signing. I think his leverage only goes down as time goes on. Because, look, I mean, if he comes out, I mean, just look at the
unless
last
there's an injury. That's my only caveat.
Even if there is an injury, right? Like, most of these teams that spend big in free agency have already spent big. So their cap is already committed to other players. So even if one of their star linemen goes down, a defensive lineman, they can't just go and sign him.
Right. They still have to pay the guy that got injured.
Correct. So I don't see that as being a a big boon for him potentially. You look, you see that the offer from the Dolphins was $17 million a year, and that's from a team that would have to overpay to get him to come there because they're a perennial loser. And that was their overpay offer? That's astounding to me. And if it's true that the Seahawks have offered him $18 million, it's clear the open market isn't going to offer him more.
Yeah, and I have a hard time with all the numbers that are being thrown around, right? Because you see $18 million, you see as low as $13 million. And I think the way some of these numbers play into each other is that, okay, let's start with the $17 million from the Dolphins. That could have been a three-year deal. We don't know the length of the deal. And I think the higher numbers are going to be more of the long-term deal. So 18 and a half, you know, maybe that is over a 4 or 5 year deal where the Seahawks can spread out a signing bonus over a longer term period. And if you see numbers that are around 13, 14, maybe that's more of a 1 year deal. So I think that's what we have to consider when we see some of the numbers thrown around.
Sure. But at this point, I understand he wants $20 million a year. Guess what?
You're not going to get $20 million a year. That market clearly is gone.
Correct. So basically, he's like your three-year-old kid who's been throwing a fit because they want a candy bar for dinner. And you're like, you're not getting a candy bar for dinner. And so they stomp around and they cry and they pout and you send them to their room and they sit there and they pout. Like, at some point, you got to come out and eat dinner or you die. Right? You
sure.
need food.
So is this bothering you?
Yes. This is pissing me off.
Really? Okay.
Sign a damn contract. Make a decision. What are you doing?
You don't like guys sitting on the fence. That's your problem with this.
It is.
Jadeveon Clowney is a fence sitter right now, and I know that this bothers you almost more than anything else.
Oh, it does. Just make a catfishing decision. Do you want to play first or not?
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. Just say something. Yeah. Like, what is this? Maybe. Like, for what reason? Just so you can make less money? Because your leverage keeps going down further and further and further? Like, it's annoying me to no end.
I could see, you know what, though? I can kind of see that. Because if you look at it from his position, okay, yes, he probably wants Khalil Mack money, which is $21 million. But you could sign the $18.5 million a year deal, and then 2 years down the road, how often do we see players who are star players, they have leverage, they can sit out and they can say, you know what, I'm outplaying the contract that I signed 2 years ago. How about you hook me up and get this up to the level that I'm actually producing at? Players do that all the time.
Absolutely. But the other thing here is, does he think he's going to outweigh John Schneider? Like, is he going to outweigh the parent telling him he can't have a candy bar for dinner? I don't think so.
No, John Schneider's pretty good at that. I mean, that's historically, I think, what he doesn't make those bad decisions that put the team into situations where they, I mean, I guess the thing that you can probably look at is maybe the worst decision over the last few years is signing Cam Chancellor to a long-term deal with, you know, his age potentially, and then he does get injured and then having to carry that cap hit over a couple of years. That's probably the worst move that you can say.
Right. You mean giving the heart and soul of the defense a contract that he has clearly earned and had a lot left in the tank to give the team, and then had a fluky neck injury that ended his entire career? Yeah, that contract. Yeah, that was the real dumb one, right? Like you said, that's the worst one you can point at.
Well, Percy Harvin, probably the worst one.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Either that or maybe Jimmy.
Yeah, he did produce, though.
Yeah, he was so-so.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little up and down.
I wouldn't call it the worst. Percy Harvin, probably because the draft pick that you gave up for him and then the cost. And then I don't know ultimately what they ended up paying him that last year, but got a Super Bowl out of the deal. So I kind of just swiped that one away from my memory.
Yeah, okay. So the Percy was a bad deal and all of that kind of didn't work, except for the fact that he did run one back in the Super Bowl and he was key in the playoffs for, you know, one catch.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Like, I'll take it. Like, I'll make that trade every single time. So,
I didn't have a Super Bowl before. Percy Harvin made two key plays that I remember being really excited about. So I, you know, the millions and millions of dollars that didn't cost me, it's not on my mind.
Yeah, it's all fine. But maybe that's why you see John Schneider here in free agency waiting for the second, third tier guys going out and signing a buttload of offensive linemen that are all kind of the same guy in a way, not necessarily in just skill set, but just in the, hey, had real potential to be real good, has shown a flash here and there, and I can get on the cheap. That's pretty much every, that's the MO of every one of these guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For the 3-4 guys that you can easily fit under the contract, letting George Fant go, letting Jermaine Ifedi go, that's, I think that's going to work out pretty well for the Seahawks with the guys that they're going to get, because the guys, they can play. And they're not dumpster fires, I wouldn't say. I think Abuehi maybe has the most dumpster fire potential in him, but it's just a one-year deal. And, you know, who knows how much of the $3 million contract is in incentives and that sort of thing. I don't know if we have the details on that yet. So it is, I think the moves on the offensive line that make sense. The one move that I really like is the one that just happened this week. Quentin Dunbar, they get from Washington for a 5th-round pick. And a prototypical Seahawks cornerback. Now, he was converted from wide receiver, which, you know, worked out well in Richard Sherman's case. Has the Richard Sherman feel to him. He graded out. This is the part that people get excited about, and maybe a little bit too excited.
You think?
The idea that he would have the second highest coverage grade from PFF, which it, I hesitate to put that out there because it isn't like the guy was a Pro Bowler last year.
Yeah. So quick question, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your excitement level about this trade?
I'd put it at a 6 because I do think that he would be a guy who you put in there and would be an improvement over Trey Flowers. I think they got better on the trade.
Okay. That's interesting take by you. Look, that the trade in itself, like if I'm going to put a number on it, that 5 to 6 range sounds about right to me. Because I do think they got good value in terms of a guy for a 5th-round pick. But number one, he's on the last year of his deal. He's going to want to get paid. So even if he comes in and balls out this next year and does replace Trey Flowers, which, by the way, I'm not ready to pencil in like right out of the gate as everybody else is, that he's some sort of clear upgrade over Trey Flowers. I don't see that at all. But so he comes in. Let's say he does replace Flowers, does ball out. Now you got to back up the freaking truck and pay a corner a bunch of money, which is not what the Seahawks should do. That's a position that they should never pay top-tier money for. They can always find another dude. That's what they do. And that's what Pete Carroll is good at. He trains up corners. That's a market inefficiency for them. Don't do that. So they give up a 5th-round pick for a guy who could come in and play corner. And everybody pencils him in as better than Trey Flowers right out of the gate. Really? So a guy, you're telling me a guy that was used to be a wide receiver, who was an undrafted guy, who played for the dumpster fire that is the Washington Redskins, couldn't break the lineup for like the first 3 to 4 years of his career, and gets injured all the time, and then has a great half of a year for the Redskins last year, and he's the guy that's better than Trey Flowers, who came in as a rookie and played really, really well and played an average corner level last year, the entire season, both seasons. That guy, Dunbar, is better than Flowers. Like, we're sure about that.
I don't think that, well, I think there's some people that feel as though they're sure. And I think he will be the starter over Flowers this year. Just based on the fact that he's going into his 6th season now, so he has a little bit more experience. Now, the first couple seasons, he was converting over from wide receiver to corner, so that takes a little bit of time to go through that conversion process. Flowers is going through the conversion process of safety to corner, at least it's still on the defensive side of the ball. But I do think that the injury history is a concern, too, and the first couple of years was just him not being in the lineup, just because I think that he wasn't good enough to crack the lineup. He did have significant injury in 2018, and then last year was kind of minor injuries. And I think there's something to that idea of him being unhappy in Washington and with his current contract situation, wanting to leave. You know, is that going to get better this year? I don't know. It is a risk, I think, with this type of situation. But a 5th-round pick for a guy with that kind of upside, I think is a risk worth taking. And even if you only get him for 1 year, a 1 year upgrade over Trey Flowers, that's okay. Trey, he'll still be on the team. People are talking about cutting Flowers. I mean, come on now. Why would you do that?
Yeah, that makes zero sense to me. I think the idea that you say, or not you, but the proverbial you, that people say that this is clearly an upgrade over Flowers, I think is insanity. I don't get that at all. I think he might be. I think that competition is going to be very close all throughout the offseason, if there is an offseason. But I don't know. Maybe just because he is 6'2", and he runs fast, and used to be a receiver, and it's all those things, right, that sound like Richard Sherman, right? And I think that's why people all automatically go, oh, my God, we got, you know, basically another Richard Sherman for a fifth-round pick. I don't know where. Do you think the Redskins are letting Richard Sherman walk out the door for a fifth-round pick? No, absolutely not.
Bill Belichick let Justin Coleman walk out the door for a seventh-round pick. So this is one of those times, if you're a general manager and John Schneider is calling you about a defensive back.
Yeah. And it's fine. I mean, I guess I like the idea. I think in terms of a fifth-round pick, great value for that. But I think people are overstating Quentin Dunbar and who he is and how good he actually is right now at this moment.
Yeah.
And how he's going to fit in the system. There's a lot of unknowns here yet. And I'd say pump the brakes on the Quentin Dunbar hype just a little bit. It's a little out of control.
And I think a lot of that goes into the PFF score. But I see guys, you know, that we've had on the show, like Samuel Gold, who is a Skins fan, and yeah, he says he likes the deal for Seattle. He likes Quentin Dunbar. So I put more stock into a guy like Sam Gold saying that it's a good move for Seattle. And
yeah,
I don't think he's saying that, you know, he expected Dunbar to be the next Richard Sherman or anything, but he likes him as a player and he thinks he'd fit for the Seahawks. And he plays that right side of the field. So it naturally just makes me think that he's likely going to either push Trey Flowers or he's going to be an upgrade.
He's going to push Trey Flowers. I think that's really what it is. Flowers has the advantage of playing in the Seahawks system for the first 2 years of his career. We've seen a lot of guys come in and struggle with that whole kick step technique that Pete Carroll teaches when they first arrive. I mean, I just see this as going to be as being a much harder transition than most people seem to think. I kind of see the possibility that he could end up being the slot corner.
Maybe. I mean, he doesn't play a ton in the slot. He doesn't. But
he used to be a wide receiver. You're telling me he can't go from, you know, being on the outside of the hash marks to the inside of the hash marks as a defender?
Well, I mean, couldn't any of these guys? Couldn't Trey Flowers go from playing on the outside to the inside?
That could happen too.
Couldn't Shaquille Griffin?
That could happen too. And you know what? The idea of Flowers moving inside might make some sense in the terms that he used to be a safety. And so played more on the inside of the field might make more sense to him. I don't know.
Or but based on alignment, based on personnel, you know, if you have a speedy guy in the slot, maybe Dunbar makes more sense. If you have a tight end in the slot, maybe a guy like Flowers makes more sense. So I think it could be a personnel type thing, too.
Sure. I think you got a starter level player in Dunbar for a fifth round pick for 1 year. And that's a nice trade. And we'll see what kind of happens from there.
They got better with this trade. More, they would improve more with this trade than they would have been spending it on a fifth round pick on a guy that may or may not make the roster next year.
Yeah, maybe this is more certain, right? Because you've seen the guy play in the league.
Yeah,
is the big difference. But to be, you know, neck deep with a shovel in Trey Flowers' grave, like I think is a little premature.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's just all the articles that I saw when this signing went down. Like, basically, I saw the trade, you know, come across the screen, and all I could think was, who the hell is Quentin Dunbar?
Looking at Pro Football Reference, you know, I like to look at the numbers, and not just the numbers in terms of production, but like the actual numbers that he wore. He wore number 17.
Yeah.
Which, you know how I feel about a wide receiver wearing a number in the teens.
Right.
Then he switched to 47, which, how much sense does that make? Is that even?
I don't know.
Who wears numbers in the 40s? Long snappers?
Sometimes, yeah.
Linebackers? Yeah.
Long snappers and safeties.
Okay. But then he switched to 23, which is a good Seahawks number.
True, true. I guess he's a Jordan fan as well, right?
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking maybe he was just a Marcus Trufant fan.
I'm going to go with Jordan having a larger impact on young athletes.
So when you think
Marcus
of the number
Trufant.
23, your mind just goes to Jordan and just skips over Marcus Trufant?
Yeah. Every time.
Okay. Guess maybe one of us is a bigger Seahawks fan than the other. Just saying.
Okay. One of us may also understand the impact of somebody's career more than the other. So that's cool. On a global level. Because I'm a very worldly guy, Brandon. So that's where that comes from.
Well, you know what? Listeners of this show can decide for themselves which side of the fence they are on, if they're Team Adam or Team Brandon on this one.
Well, they're always Team Adam.
Let's see. Is Team Adam on board with Team Chance Warmack coming to the Seahawks?
I like the move. I do. And this is different than some of the other 2013 flameouts that we've taken in, like Luke Jokel, right? Because Jokel never had success.
Right. At least Chance Warmack at right guard with the Titans, you know, coming out of Alabama, first year in the league, first 3 years in the league with the Titans. He had three good seasons.
Yeah, very good seasons. And then from what I can kind of gather, as he moved on in his career, it was more injuries that has kind of held him back.
Yeah.
And so first round talent, first round size. I like the idea that John Schneider took a gamble on Warmack, and that makes me very happy.
Nice self-censor on that one.
Yeah.
With all these moves, I try and look at the red flags. I try and look at the potential. The red flag for me in this was the Titans, that him going into his fourth season when they had an opportunity to give him a fifth-year option, they said no. But I guess you have to tie that back to salary levels for guards in that, because that would have been going into 2016. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, were guards making upwards of $10 million a year? I don't think they were quite at that level. So maybe they just didn't see him as, maybe they thought they could get him at a lower number. Then he tears a tendon in his hand in just week two, ends up sitting out that whole season. And then I'm guessing he was probably sour on the fact that the Titans didn't give him his fifth year option and decided to go to Philly. Philly was a Super Bowl team in 2017. So, you know, he picked a good team to go to in the sense that a good team overall. Now, he didn't pick a good team in the sense of where he could compete at the right guard spot that he had played with Tennessee, because Brandon Brooks, the Pro Bowl right guard for Philly, you're not going to crack the lineup there.
Most likely not. So the question becomes, where does Warmack fit in with this offensive line? And I mean, you kind of look at who you got going here and where they might plug him in. And it makes sense to me that he'd be the Upati replacement, right?
I don't know. I think they have enough guys at left guard that now he can play there, and he has played at left guard.
Right.
I think this is a move to push DJ Fluker.
Really?
Yeah.
Arguably your best offensive lineman?
Arguably. Yeah. But it could be a potential upgrade. You're not going to take that upgrade if he's better at right guard than left guard?
Well, who are you penciling in at left guard?
I see Phil Haynes competing for left guard. I see Jamarco Jones competing for left guard. And I see BJ Finney, their other offensive lineman, signing competing for left guard. So I think there's three guys there. I think you need a guy to compete with DJ Fluker.
I'd rather see Jamarco Jones competing at right tackle, I think.
Didn't we decide that he can't really play right tackle so much?
What, because his rookie year he tried it for like half a minute and then busted up his leg?
Well, and then he played left tackle for Dwayne Brown and that didn't go so well.
Yeah, that's left tackle.
Oh, yeah.
It's not right tackle.
It's a tackle position.
They're not all tackles are the same. Check out the salaries. You'll see a difference.
I understand that there's a difference, and right tackle may make more sense for him, but he was a left tackle in college, so...
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He actually played tackle in college. Like, who's competing with Shell at this point?
Yeah, is it going to be a Boye potentially, or is it going to be... Yeah, I guess I would hope maybe a draft pick.
Yeah, maybe. That's the thing about all of these free agent signings on the offensive line is these guys are fairly interchangeable. I mean, BJ Finney was kind of a Swiss Army knife sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Warmack could play about anywhere inside. I mean, maybe short of center. I don't know if he's ever tried it, but he could be right guard or a left guard. You know, Jones, you're talking about plugging him in at left guard. I mean, but he could compete at the tackle spots. Phil Haynes,
there's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we haven't seen much out of him at all. So it's tough to, you know, pin a lot of hopes there. But they seem to be collecting enough guys that are interchangeable enough.
They still have Ethan Posick on the roster, who's interchangeable at center and guard.
Right. That everybody's kind of just going to compete at all of it is more or less what I get out of it, except for maybe Dwayne Brown.
Yeah. Dwayne Brown's set at left tackle.
Right. And for me, Fluker.
Okay. I don't think Fluker is set.
That's bizarre, but okay.
No, I think that the Warmack signing is the
competition. Was DJ Fluker good or not good last year?
He was okay.
Yeah, he was good.
You're saying that there's no possible way to upgrade over DJ Fluker.
I'm saying that the idea that a guy like Warmack, who was good for a couple years and then wasn't good, is going to beat out DJ Fluker.
You said that he wasn't good. Yeah, he wasn't great at left guard. He was okay. But, you know, what? He wasn't good enough to beat out Wisniewski, I guess, for the Eagles at left guard. So yeah. I guess that's a concern. But put him back in the position that he had success at, which was right guard at Tennessee.
Right.
And let him
compete. Why do you want to get rid of Fluke?
I don't want to. I just want I want the potential of an upgrade.
All right. I guess when I'm looking at the offensive line, when I'm hoping for a potential of an upgrade, that is one of the positions that I feel in the starting five needs it the least, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Apart from Dwayne Brown.
Correct.
Yeah.
Dwayne Brown and Fluker, and then Britt when healthy.
Okay.
Like, those three guys are your best three.
Okay. Well, I guess I just look at the two, and I say, okay, you got Britt, you have Dwayne Brown,
right,
and the other three, you work in the best three guys.
Right. So, and I guess both of us are still penciling Britt in because we're not of the part of the fandom that can't wait to jettison Justin Britt because y'all be greedy and you're just looking at cap space.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to spend on an offensive lineman, especially a guy who's been one of the leaders of that group and like a Seahawk for his entire career and is regarded highly by, you know, the league as a whole. He's a hell of a center. Like, why are you trying to get rid of him? All you can see is dollar signs. Come on, people.
Well, I can see it because what they've done so far. Okay, let's bag on the Seahawks a little bit for what they haven't done so far.
Okay.
They haven't really addressed the defensive line. And apart from bringing in Bruce Irvin and re-signing Jaron Reed, which I think you and I might agree that that wasn't a move that we expected, that he would come back. And so maybe we thought there would be more movement on the defensive line because that the salary that Jaron Reed is taking up would have been dispersed among maybe one or two other players coming in. But they haven't addressed the defensive line yet. And what was the biggest problem last year? The defensive freaking line.
Right. Specifically pass rush, right?
Yeah.
And I think kind of the big reason for that is because of freaking Clowney and his indecision.
Well, they could move on. The Seahawks could say, okay, we're going to move on to Everson Griffin and another guy.
Right. But Everson Griffin, older, mm-hmm, and maybe a better pass rusher, but is he a better overall player?
No.
No.
But if your desire is to move on and solidify it right now, you could do it.
You could. Or, like, Clowney could just make a freaking decision. And, yeah, you know, you could sign the younger guy with more upside.
Do you think? No, I mean, it would have leaked out if they would have agreed to it, because there is that thing that the NFL's put out that says that teams are prohibited from officially announcing that they have signed a player until they've agreed to terms and, you know, they've passed a physical. And, you know,
yeah, you're very hung up on this, like, stupid order that the NFL put out that is not going to be followed because teams are going to leak this crap out in all sorts of different ways.
That would have been leaked out. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of like in the NBA where they were trying there for a while to keep the players from talking with one another in the off season. It's like, oh, okay.
Because they were forming super teams together.
Right. Right. Sure. Sure. Yeah, you're gonna regulate that. Good luck.
Yeah, it would have gotten out by now. I mean, just based off of all the other rumors that are out there. So let's go to
wide receiver.
We can go to wide receiver. You know what? Let's start out at wide receiver because I will go through, Adam, my top 10 list of the best moves so far. And it turns out wide receiver comes in at my number 10 spot on my list.
Interesting. Okay.
Philip Dorsett, the 10th best move that I will say that the John Schneider and the Seahawks has made so far this year.
Okay. Let's circle back to Dorsett. I think I'm going to need to hear the rest of this before I make comments here.
Did you want to talk about other wide receivers?
No. I want to talk about Dorsett, but I'm just curious about all the guys that you think are a better move than Dorsett.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I put him at number 10 on the list because I think he's an upgrade over Jerron Brown. I think he is more of an outside type receiver. He doesn't have a ton of snaps in the slot over his history of his career, even though he is a smaller type guy. But, he can go out of the slot. It's just that he's more of an outside guy. So you want me to go up my list before you circle back? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
BJ Finney, number 9. I see him as an upgrade over Ethan Posick. I don't see him as a replacement for Justin Britt.
Okay. Interesting. I would already put Dorsett above Finney because Dorsett will actually play where Finney, you're talking about an upgrade over a backup lineman that may not see the field. But that's cool. Okay. Continue. Okay.
Number 8. Letting Tedrick Thompson seek a trade, which means he's probably gone. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, okay. I'd keep that one above Dorsett. All right, fine.
Greg Olsen, the Seahawks signing Greg Olsen. I count him as part of this free agency, even though it came before the free agency period started.
I would agree.
Okay.
I'd concur with that.
Number 6, I have the Brandon Shell signing, which also means that if Eddie's not coming back, and he's the guy that I kind of pencil in as the right tackle now.
Okay. I would say the Dorsett and Shell deals are similar in importance to me, but okay.
Okay. Yeah. Dorsett. Here's why Dorsett is kind of low for me.
I don't get the rest of the list before I get to defend this.
Okay. No, that's fine. We'll go through the rest.
All right.
Number 5, trading for Quentin Dunbar with the Skins. I think, like I said, I think he will be an upgrade or push Trey Flowers to be the starting caliber corner.
Okay.
I do think that Dunbar's going to end up being your starting right corner on day one, though.
I disagree, but okay.
Number 4, signing Bruce Irvin. This could go higher or lower based on his contract number. We still don't have his contract number, but here's a place where they address the pass rush. And so I put it in here at number 4 just because we don't have the numbers.
Yeah, I think it's more important than the Greg Olsen signing. Out of everything that you've talked about to this point, this would be my number 1 to this point is Bruce Irvin. Because he had precisely double as many sacks as our sack leader last year. He's a professional football player that you can pencil in and you know exactly what you're going to get. And you've seen him in this scheme and succeed. I think that is a tremendously important signing considering how piss poor the pass rush was last year.
This is the one part where, and maybe I should have this one as my number 3, but I wanted to couch it with the idea just not knowing the contract number yet because if he prevents you from, if his contract number is to the point to where, I don't know, $8, $9, $10 million to where you can't add more guys to the pass rush because of Bruce Irvin, then that would bring it down from being as high as, number 3, which is where I have the Chance Warmack signing because of everything that I laid out, just that I do think that he offers that potential of being a significant upgrade on the offensive line.
Sure, left guard.
Even if he plays, I don't care. If he plays left guard, right guard, I think he can be an upgrade over Upati last year, and I think that he could be an upgrade over DJ Fluker.
False, but yeah, as far as left guard, you're right.
You have this like burning desire in your heart for DJ Fluker, I think, and I like him as a dude too, but I think there's room for improvement there.
He's a mauler. He's consistent. I can count on him. He is a guy that has that sort of personality that kind of fires up the rest of the team. I mean, he's a warrior.
Yeah.
Like, that's the exact kind of fighting spirit I want in an offensive lineman.
And then the top 2 moves are actually 2 moves that it's kind of like the Tedrick Thompson allowing him to seek a trade. Right. Not signing Quentin Jefferson to $7 million a year. I think There's guys out there, guys on the team that can help fill that role, that can get you 18 tackles a year and three sacks. That's not a lot of production to try and fill in, especially for a $7 million a year player. And then the number one, not signing George Fant to $10 million a year.
All right. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I didn't think of putting free agency moves in context in order like you did, and including things you didn't do. Like I didn't think about that. So yeah, I'm going to go with you. Like not giving Fant $10 million a year, solid. Not signing a Fetty again, solid. Uh-huh. Letting T2 walk, solid for sure. Yeah, so there is some value in not doing something.
I had
something,
to find
right?
a way to get it to 10 people because a lot of these other moves aren't even worthy about being on the list. I don't know if Abuehi is going to be all that great of a deal as being that swing tackle guy, potential tight end guy. I don't know if I did put BJ Finney on this list, but
how much did they give Abuehi?
I think it was up to $3.3 million a year.
Okay. So you could either have paid Fant $10 million a year to be the extra offensive lineman slash tight end, or Abuehi $3
million. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and Abuehi was, what, a top pick?
Yeah,
and
he can do George Fant things.
And maybe he has higher potential.
Okay. I guess I look at a lot of these guys and that have been in the league, and you can kind of project who they're going to be on your team because you've seen them be something on other teams, right?
Sure.
Like, I don't look at Abuehi and go, oh my gosh, like, I bet you he's going to suddenly blossom and be a starting tackle. I don't. He's George Fant's replacement. I don't look at Shell and think, oh my God, like, he's going to be so much better than a Fetty.
No,
well, he's probably not.
Fetty's cheaper
be just
replacement.
Like him. Yeah, with a few less penalties. Cool. Like, I look at Dunbar. I see you were good for, you know, half a season. Neat. We'll see if you can, you know, do that, you know, with more consistency. I mean, you can see all these guys like Philip Dorsett, and you can be like, all right, I can pencil you in and I know what you can do. And I've seen some people that really don't like this signing.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not fired up about it, but I think it's definitely a Malik Turner upgrade, a Jerron Brown upgrade, a David Moore upgrade. And the reason I believe that is you said, well, he's more of an outside guy than a slot guy. Well, kind of. He's both.
Sure.
He does both about equally, especially if you go back and look at last year with New England. They would sometimes they'd line him up inside, but then run him on those little pick plays. I mean, rubs, because it was the Patriots, and then bring him over the middle. I mean, he played in the middle of the field quite a bit. He still is able to run, you know, the go routes and be quote unquote a deep threat. Even though he doesn't get on top of guys as much as you'd think with that speed.
Sure.
He's more versatile underneath than I think people give him credit for. And his hands are very good. I mean, he's a solid professional receiver at your third wide receiver slot. And let's say you do believe he's more of an outside receiver than an inside receiver. Okay, fine. So when you are running trips, you bring Tyler Lockett in and he runs those slot routes and Philip Dorsett's running your outside routes. Or, I mean, there's a million ways to get him involved. And then you saw the Patriots too. They ran him on a lot of those jet sweeps and that sort of stuff with a little bit of success. Look, you can pencil him in as a 30 to 40 catch guy who's reliable. He's professional. He's a lot like on the same level as Bruce Irvin. He's a guy that's been around a little bit. You know what you're going to get. And I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised as to his impact on the receiving core in the sense of just bringing that stability to the third wide receiver spot. Not going to light it up. Not going to be, you know, a surprise like DK Metcalf was last year, but a guy that you can count on to go out there and be a real pro and be effective. And that we've been looking for that for a while.
Well, and I think that was when we went into this offseason, as far as, you know, people talking about a number three, wide receiver number three, he fits into that type of mold. You know, is he going to be the third best target on the Seahawks next year? No, I see him as maybe the fifth or sixth, because you're going to have Tyler Lockett, you're going to have DK Metcalf, you're going to have Greg Olsen, you're going to have Will Dissly. And then you're talking about maybe, you know, competing for receptions out of the backfield with whoever the running back is. So in terms of the number of receptions that he's going to get, it's not a significant impact. But I think that's why the receiver spot wasn't a position that we looked at. You know, we talked about wants and needs last week, mm-hmm. and how improving at wide receiver, the depth this far down was a want, not a need. Mm-hmm. I think this fills that role, though.
Oh, it certainly does. And then when Josh Gordon is reinstated and the Seahawks bring him back, now I've got four pretty talented guys.
There's your actual wide receiver three.
Why? Why is he your actual wide receiver three over top of Dorsett?
Because he's better.
Okay. Is he? I mean, at this point in his career.
In terms of talent?
No, at this point in his career.
Yeah, about equal, I guess.
About equal. That's the way I kind of see it. Just depends on what kind of matchup you want. I mean, you trot Gordon out there against, you know, your bigger safeties and corners, and if the team's a little more, you know, diminutive, then you bring in Dorsett. Or if you got some slow guys you want to burn. And the thing that I do like about the way Dorsett fits in, even if they do play him inside a little bit more, you know, he can run those seam routes and things like that and do a lot of vertical routes that fit in well with what Russell Wilson likes to do.
Yeah, I think it's a fine move.
Solid. Solid.
I'm not going to get upset about it.
I'm not going to get upset about it.
Well, a lot of these moves, you're talking, I mean, when you're paying a guy $2 to $3 million to play on the team,
yeah,
I mean, it's the bottom end of the pay scale now.
Right.
So and is your team better or worse? Like, I think it's better.
It is.
Over Jerron Brown.
Even though I think we talked about it a few pods back, and I was like, I'm not real interested. I didn't know that you'd get him for a year for, you know, a chump change. I figured somebody would pay him a little bit of money just based on the first round pedigree.
Yeah. Do we know what he's making?
I thought it was like $2-3 million, wasn't it? Three. I want to say three.
Well, three would make sense because last year he made 2.6 with
New England.
With the Patriots. I don't think we have details out yet on his salary for the Seahawks.
I swear I saw something, but maybe I just made it up in my head. I don't know.
I know I was thinking about three just based on what he made last year. But
yeah, I guess maybe I came up with three because when they signed him, I'm like, I hope they signed him for about three.
Yeah.
It feels right.
It feels right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, going back to defensive line.
Okay.
The status there is a little bit depressing to me. I think interior, for starters, Jaron Reed, Puna Ford, mm-hmm. you have your starting lineup set.
Yeah.
The depth, Brian Monet, Nas Jones is still on the team.
Yeah.
And DeMarcus Christmas. Those are your other three guys.
Okay.
Of those three guys, Monet probably has the most starting experience. DeMarcus Christmas, they allowed him to stay on the roster after having the back injury in the preseason last year. Nas Jones sat out all year on IR with a knee injury. So you have a couple injury guys that you're hoping can come back and at least provide some competition.
You figure that between Nas and Christmas that you get one of those guys coming back off an injury that will make for a solid backup defensive tackle, right? I think that's a fairly safe bet that one of the two of them, because we saw Nas Jones come out and actually do some really cool things early on in his career.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a guy that I'm still excited about. Monet proved himself to be a reliable plug-in guy, which that's fine. Would I like to see another defensive tackle brought in that has a little bit of game-wrecking expertise? Yes, I would love that. I mean, I don't know how many times I got to jump on the Mike Daniels train, but
yeah, he's still out there.
He'd be a great rotational guy on the defensive line. I mean, shoot, Mike Bennett, I think he could pick up for a song still. And he could come in and actually, you know, give you a little something as a rotational lineman. I mean, not like he used to,
mm-hmm.
but for 5 to 10 plays a game, I mean, he could be that sort of guy. I mean, there's dudes out there in this third tier of free agency, which we haven't quite hit yet, that I think that's where you're going to see John Schneider make a flurry of moves. But, you know, it's all going to happen once Clowney stops holding the organization hostage with his indecision.
Yeah, you know what? There's some people that are really upset about this whole Clowney business, like to the point that they almost don't want him to come back because for the fence sitting for a week.
Yeah. Do you want to be here? That, I mean, that's
you know what? At
it.
Some point, though, I think John Schneider does have to ask himself that question, right?
Exactly.
How long do you wait?
Well, you know me, I would have been done waiting by now. Uh-huh. I'd have given him my best offer, and if that wasn't on the table, I'd be on to other moves.
Yeah. Like, you know, whether that trade was, or.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm moving on.
Okay.
I mean, because I like Clowney a lot. I think he's worth a big contract, and I think he's the type of talent that you can build a really good defensive line around, but he's not Reggie White. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not holding my whole team hostage over Clowney.
Yeah. You want guys who want to be here.
Correct.
Al Woods doesn't want to be here.
That's fine.
He went to Jacksonville.
Bye-bye.
We looked at the interior, looking at defensive end. You got Bruce Irvin, Rasheem Green, LJ Collier, Brandon Jackson's coming back. Mm-hmm. Some of those guys are guys that can bounce from the outside to the inside, too, I suppose.
I don't know that you want to bounce them from the outside to the inside, man. We need outside guys, too.
We do need outside guys. But I just think of, you know, these are all bigger defensive ends, you know. Bruce Irvin is the one guy that's kind of in that 250, 260 range, whereas I guess I don't look at Collier being all that much of a speed guy. Brandon Jackson, not a speed guy.
No.
But
I don't care if you're a speed guy or a power guy when it comes to rush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just get there.
Hey, there's a couple guys that I didn't realize who were on the roster at defensive end when I went looking down the roster. Shakir Soto.
That's a person?
Adam, he's been on the team since December 24th of 2019.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought I was a fan. Apparently not.
And Pita Taumapenu.
There's a guy named Jalapeno on the roster?
Taumapenu.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So
he was a sixth round pick for the 49ers back in 2017.
Oh.
I'm surprised you don't remember that.
Yeah, me too. very impactful guy. I don't know, man. The defensive line, yes, it's frustrating. I kind of wished, I mean, I talked about this a few pods ago. I was like, look, I don't much care how they spend their free agents money as long as it's on defensive line and offensive line. I'd prefer the emphasis be on defensive line, and it seems to have gone the opposite way. I kind of wish they had taken the same approach to the D line that they've taken to the offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, give me some guys that have some potential, some upside competition. I want to see it. And we're just kind of left holding the bag.
In a draft where defensive end isn't a strength.
I guess you got to bank on the fact, if you're the Seahawks, that Collier is going to be better. I mean, an actual contributor, somebody that is worthy of the draft capital that you spent on him.
Yeah.
I mean, if he pans out like you hope and takes that kind of leap, pair him with Irvin and one more guy.
Yeah, I don't like hoping for guys, though, necessarily, for guys that that you're going to be starters. But yeah, there is still time, though, to make moves, to make trades. Like, who would have known that the Dunbar trade was out there, for example?
I guess we'll see.
And we'll see if there's any other teams that are willing to pick up players off of the Seahawks free agents. This far in, the only free agents that have gone to sign elsewhere are George Fant, Quentin Jefferson, and Al Woods.
Right.
I think that's...
Remember when everybody was saying that somebody was going to pay big for Ifedi?
Yeah, it's not happening.
It's almost as if the league evaluated him the same way that most of us did.
I do wonder, though, if he just valued himself too high. And if there was a deal at the start of free agency that he just passed on and now he's not going to get it.
Yeah, sounds a lot like somebody else out there and needs a sign.
Like Clowney.
Yeah.
Maybe the Seahawks have now gotten to the point to where other teams aren't willing to pay big for our free agents.
Well, I mean, geez Louise, they paid big for Fant and Jefferson.
Well, Jefferson, I wouldn't say big. It was...
For what he's done?
Okay.
Yeah.
The numbers guys, they love what Jefferson did.
Yeah, cool. I mean, he's fine. Like, he's a fine player. He's a league average defensive lineman. Fantastic. I just wouldn't have paid him that kind of money. That's all.
Yeah.
How about the idea of bringing in an aging pass rusher on like a 1-year, you know, small contract? Like, Terrell Suggs or Matthews, or does any of that kind of float your boat? Or maybe two or three of those guys.
Well, and I think that's some of the names that you're down to now, right?
Right.
And those are going to be the guys that probably come more in the April, May timeframe after teams have gone through the draft and they're looking to see where they can fill out their rosters in certain positions. I could see Matthews making sense at a certain number. You know, you brought up Michael Bennett's name. Terrell Suggs, yeah, if he's not done.
I've heard he might not be.
No, he just won a Super Bowl, so maybe he wants another one.
I'm trying to see who's still available.
Cameron Wake is a guy out there I'd put in that, you know, out of Tennessee.
Yeah, the ageless Cameron Wake. No, I'm dead serious. I'm not even saying that like mockingly.
Yeah.
He seems to continue to produce. I mean, he didn't come into the league until what? He was like 33 out of the CFL, 49 years old, and he like started as a rookie in the NFL. And now he's 86 and still getting it done.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, his risk of dying of the coronavirus is higher than about anybody not named Tom Brady in the league.
Oh, Vinny Curry.
Yeah, I'd be interested in Vinny Curry.
Yeah, he's on the lower end of his 30s. Benson Mayo is not even 30. He spent a minute here in Seattle.
Yeah, I had a cup of coffee.
Derek Wolfe. What do you think about Derek Wolfe? I mean, he's...
All right. So I will kind of just give you our buddy Jared's idea of Derek Wolfe, giant Broncos fan, Jared Tim. He early on was really into Derek Wolfe. And as the years have kind of gone by, he is totally over Derek Wolfe.
Okay.
A guy who's a so-so pass rusher, but gets massively pushed around in the run game.
Yeah, because I remember around the Super Bowl time frame, him being, because wasn't that the 2013 or 2014 year, the year that they actually won the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. that I felt like Wolf was like at his peak in terms of a recognizable guy a guy who was surrounded by so much talent that I think it brought him up a little bit in terms of his status.
Yeah, he was the Eric Armstead of that group. I'm dead serious.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Jabal Sheard, another one of those guys out of Indy.
Yeah, that was one of those dudes that's always, to me, has been kind of overrated. But yeah,
maybe properly rated since he doesn't have a gig yet.
Yeah, I suppose, huh? What do you think Griffin is going to go for, I mean, at this point?
Hmm.
I mean, if nobody's going to give Clowney, I mean, basically, you know what the market is for Clowney. It's somewhere in that 15 to 18 million a year, depending on how you structure it, just like you'd said before. Where do you put Griffin in that? Like more like 10 to 15? Just because of age?
There's a lot of deals that we've seen for both defensive line and offensive line, that three-year, $30 million contract.
Yeah.
I think that's what Everson Griffin's going to get.
Okay.
I thought Clowney would get paid upwards of 20, and that didn't happen, so what do I know?
Yeah, I just never knew on that one. I mean, you heard the talk. I guess I wasn't sold on it, but I wouldn't have been shocked either. I am surprised that I'm just surprised that he hasn't signed for like 17, 18 million a year somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just shocking to me.
If it really was on the table to stay in Seattle around that $18 million a year mark, no matter what the terms of length of the contract are.
Right.
And you know what? Maybe at this point that deal's not on the table anymore. Maybe now that they've allowed him to go and get a sense of the market. That might have been the deal that was on the table before free agency started.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've had a chance for teams to actually make an offer and see what you are valued, maybe that number does go down.
Oh, if you're John Schneider, that's exactly what you do. If you've ever negotiated anything, that's exactly what you do. Oh, okay. Well, the crappy teams like the Dolphins were willing to pay you 17. Well, here's the thing. We like winning, and you seem to like winning. So you're going to have to take a little less money to do the winning. So how's 15 sound?
15, 16 and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be something to watch. Hopefully we can stop watching.
Just do something. Just do something on the defensive line.
Yeah, hopefully we get an answer soon.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break, Adam, and get to the second half of the show.
All right, sounds like a plan.
Getting into the second half of the show. We do the ad break and there's no ad. Because of our members of the flock, and we will get to them. But one of the things that's been kind of curious to me, Adam, is now with a lot of these studio podcasts that we've heard just over the years that they sound outstanding. And then now we get to the point where everybody has to do these shows from home now. And it's like people don't understand that you can bring in studio equipment into your home. And it's okay. You can do shows like this with still studio level quality-ish and not sounding like you're talking into your iPhone microphone.
Yeah, it's absolutely hilarious to see some of these other podcasts that were, like you said, studio produced. And then all of a sudden, you've got Chris Sims at home, like sitting with his laptop open and you're staring at the rafters and looking up his nose while he speaks into a garbage can and it's recorded. It's like NBC, like, I mean, you can get a mic hawk, right?
Yeah.
And like give it to him. Like that's something that's out there. I mean, Chris Sims himself could splurge for, you know, a little tiny travel microphone or a $30 Shure microphone.
Maybe a $50 webcam that's a little bit higher quality than the one that's built into your laptop.
Right. When you see, you know, the boogeyman virus coming and you know you're going to have to be at home, like I know not everybody has that prepper mindset, but maybe you thought, well, this is a job I could do from home. Maybe I'll take a corner of my house and turn it into, like, you know, somewhere I could broadcast from over the interwebs,
yeah,
and continue my job and not sound like, you know, some clown sitting at his kitchen table doing a podcast, which is how we started. But we're just two dork chops in Montana.
Yeah. If we can figure this stuff out, I feel like the big production should be able to figure it out, too.
Exactly. No, it is pretty sad to see how poor some of those things. I mean, even Cowherd. Like, what'd he do? Find a shower curtain with Fox Sports printed on it? Like, like put it behind him and find like one bare bulb lamp to like put in front of his face? I mean, he really does look like he's broadcasting from some sort of survival bunker in Eastern Washington.
I haven't watched Cowherd yet, but that's funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they can't do better.
No, it's not that hard. Like, you can set this stuff up because of the internet. Right. And stream this out or pre-record or, you know, it's just wild watching people have the struggles a little bit.
They do. And it makes me feel better about what we do because, you know, one of the things that I find interesting that we do this over the interwebs and we do a pretty good job of it. But because you're not in the same room, it's a lot easier to interrupt one another and that sort of thing. And I always thought, that kind of sucks. It was better when we're in person, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whereas now I'm watching people like Cowherd and he's got, you know, somebody on the phone. I mean, take your pick of guests, you know, and basically like Broussard, right? And they're talking all over each other all the time and they can't seem to figure out how to do a phone call, you know, and it's just, it's very interesting.
The Skype exists. You can use it. It sounds pretty good.
Right. Yeah. I find it interesting too, like that. Even when I'm on the road,
you can't get a lighting guy just on the phone to go, hey, in your house, maybe just throw a light on yourself to make it look a little better.
Yeah. Got a white sheet, put it over top of it, soften it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a poor man's softbox. This isn't hard. Reflect it off a piece of freaking white cardboard. Like, you know, I don't know.
It's a little bit surprising,
but I mean, not to toot our own horn, but we do a much better show from our own houses.
I think we are tooting our own horn.
Well, I mean, maybe I did mean to, but that was just my point.
We do have some folks that do enjoy the show. Our members of the flock at gettingintheflock.com. I'm sorry to say, Adam, we didn't
get 4,500 new people in the flock.
We did not get 4,700 new people in the flock. So we fell short of our goal of 5,000 flockers going into this week.
Fine, whatever. You only get one check now for $1,200. You don't get them monthly because y'all failed.
We were gonna do monthly checks for 1,000.
Right.
And
now you get one for $1,200.
One for $1,200. I like that we were able to work the number 12 into there.
Yeah. I mean, that's for you guys. Even though you failed us and we didn't get to 5,000. But I would like to applaud the people who did make an effort to get us towards 5,000 little flockers in a week.
Yeah, like Cam Allison, who came in at $5. He says, hey, Brandon and Adam, just want to thank you for the great show. I live in Manitoba, Canada. It can be pretty hard to get Seahawks discussion there. I look forward every week to hearing what you guys have to say about the Hawks. Thanks again. P.S. Catfish the Four Racka.
Catfish the Four Racka forever, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Cam. I appreciate that. And yeah, we're doing our part. Get everybody through the, what did we call it? Virageddon? Yeah.
Jason Kaloger came in with a raise from $1 to $3, says, oh, and there is no message.
Oh, okay. I think,
thanks to Jason.
I think the raise speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nathan Combs also gave us a raise from $5 to $12.12. Thanks to Nathan.
Ooh.
And we've been doing a little bit more on the Slack channel for people who are in the Ring of Honor, and because we have the Facebook Ring of Honor, but some people, they aren't into the Facebook thing. But I've seen a little bit more action in the Slack Ring of Honor group here lately.
Ah, Slack action, huh?
Slack action.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I you texted me yesterday and said that you guys were chatting it up a little bit, and I had to miss out on that because I was hauling supplies to the cabin. For when I bug out forever and disappear off the face of the earth. So
we do have some breaking news as we do the show, Adam. Mm. Jermaine Effetti signed a 1-year deal with the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears have been making terrible offseason moves this year. If I'm a Bears fan, I'm worried about my team.
So their GM's Ryan Pace, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
They signed Jimmy Graham. Who is way, you know, if you're signing Jimmy Graham to, like, I don't know, a 1-year, $2 to $3 million deal.
Sure. Like,
that's okay.
With all options on the table, like no trade clauses in there and guaranteed money, things like that.
Yeah. He has a no trade clause, $9 million guaranteed. That's a bad deal, Chicago.
It's a bad deal. Yeah. Did you want to go through the list of some of the other ones? Because they are amazing. The trade for Nick Foles?
Yeah, that was another bad one.
Wow. Oh, and then, but that's okay.
You could have waited and had Cam Newton and not given up any draft capital at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But not only have Cam Newton, but have him at a tenth of the price.
Than Nick Foles.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might get Nick Foles money.
Oh, God, no.
You don't think?
Oh, absolutely not.
What are the Bears paying for Nick Foles right now?
Well, I mean, okay, I'm sure Jacksonville is paying part of the salary.
Well, yeah, they had to pay all of his signing bonus.
Right. So I don't know what exactly the Bears are paying this. It's got to be in 15. The $20 million range.
Yeah, they're paying his base salary 15, and then I guess maybe roster and workout bonus. So maybe almost 16.
Okay. I figured it was closer to 20. I guess Cam gets about that, 10 to 15. It's interesting, though. I mean, so you bring in Nick Foles. And a guy who's not necessarily mobile, right? And, you know, to shore up the offensive line to be sure that he's going to be okay and a, you know, productive starter for you, you bring in Effetti. So that's But don't worry. Effetti will buy Foles the extra time for Jimmy Graham to create separation. And when Effetti's struggling to block that DN, don't worry. You just slide Jimmy Graham down the line, and he'll help block.
Oh, man. they did get Robert Quinn, though.
Yeah? No? For how much?
Yeah. 5 years, $70
million. No.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
I like Robert Quinn. I think he's a good, productive defensive end. There is no way at his age I'm paying that kind of money.
Doesn't he seem like the guy that you would go 3 years, $10 million per?
Yes. Who are they bidding against is my question.
You do have to wonder based on some of the moves they've made.
Man, if I was a Bears fan, one of the guys that every offseason, every year, I would be screaming for Ryan Pace's job at this point.
Especially after this offseason. I think the two general managers that you're most upset at after just after these first couple weeks, it's Bill O'Brien, number one, running away with it. Like, he's way out ahead of the pack.
Yes.
And then Ryan Pace, number two.
Correct. It's
who else?
I mean, who else? Who else is running their team into oblivion right now?
Les Snead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's based on moves from
previous years.
Right, but the chickens are coming home to roost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is anything that's happening to the Rams right now outside of what we predicted?
Oh, no. No, we've talked about this.
Yeah. I find it interesting though. Like, did we talk about Gurley on the last podcast? Like, we did. He hadn't been released yet.
No, we talked about him as he was about to be released.
Yeah. Yeah, that was happening as we were recording. We didn't see it. And it is hilarious, number one, that it got released. Number two, it's extra hilarious that the Atlanta Falcons signed him, of all teams.
1 year, $6 million.
For a guy on one leg. And then you see the article come out like the day after, like, yeah, his knee's still real bad.
Wow.
Yeah. And people acted like, I saw the articles the second he got cut. Is Todd Gurley a good fit in Seattle? Yada, yada. No, 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 because he can't run anymore. And he's a running back.
He's a move that could make sense down the road as maybe taking a chance on.
No.
But
no.
But not for that price.
Not for any price. He can't run anymore. Like, what part of that are people confused by?
It is a critical part of the running back position to be able to run, I suppose.
Yes. And I saw some people comment, oh, well, when he played last year, he actually played really well. Did he? I didn't see it.
I think he had double-digit touchdowns. So he contributed.
I guess. I don't know, man. I wouldn't pay them. I thought, look, maybe it's just me and my perspective on Todd Gurley. The day that he came out in the draft, I thought he was overrated. I thought he was overrated as hell when they paid him all that money. And now I think he's still overrated as the Falcons try to bring him in. I've just never been on the second coming of Walter Payton, Todd Gurley.
That's not going to happen.
Well, that's what he was billed at, and some people still buy into that hype. I think the Broncos are smarter giving Melvin Gordon money, even though I wouldn't do that.
No. But it's about the same cost, isn't it? Oh, a two-year deal with about $6.5 million per?
Yeah, I think it was somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, yeah, for a guy who can still run.
That it's a significantly better deal to get a running back who can still run.
Exactly.
No, I was thinking if the thing is, when they're talking about Todd Gurley to Seattle, if it were a 1 year, $3 million deal where you could cut him in the preseason, it wouldn't be that big of a cap hit to where you could kind of get a look at him in the preseason and then decide.
You don't need a look at him, though.
That wouldn't offend me at all. I'm just saying that wouldn't offend me.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you don't need a look at him. You've seen him on film.
Yeah.
The burst is gone. And it's sad. And I don't even hate him personally. Like, it's not a personal attack. It's just, you know, when your knee goes bad, and the team that was built entirely around you cuts you 2 years after giving you a giant deal. I believe it was 2 years, right? I mean, that's a bad sign.
The crazy thing about the Rams, and this is where the general manager made a massive mistake, they paid him 2 years before he needed to be paid.
But that's okay. He you know, he kind of made up for that by signing Jared Goff to a contract that counts to, like, cumulatively 90 odd some million dollars over the cap over his
he's a $96 million dead cap hit now. at least they were able to win an NFC championship.
Yeah, correct. And at least they gave away, you know, the majority of their draft to bring in guys like Brandon Cooks, who, you know, gone, and then also trading a bunch of picks for guys like Jalen Ramsey, who's, that's fine. So for the privilege to pay him a big contract. So that's neat.
If you can look at the two franchises, the Rams and the Seahawks, mm-hmm. the Rams traded big picks for Jalen Ramsey, and the Seahawks trade a fifth round pick for a guy like Quentin Dunbar, who has a lot more, who has upside.
Correct. Yeah. If you're going to trade for a dude on the last year of his contract, I like the way John did it a lot better than Snead.
I mean, Ramsey is a guy who has proven it over years on the field, though. So there's that point to it. But in terms of draft pick compensation, which one's the better move?
Exactly. I'm not saying Ramsey's a bad player, but, you know, to give up that much draft capital when you've already given up quite a bit for a swing for the fences one last time, and now you just got to pay the guy. Otherwise, you just burn those draft picks. I don't know, man. It's just, it's throwing good money after bad.
So I just saw a tweet coming in from the Ring of Honor. Jason Bonnert posted Effetti to the Bears, and Mike Clay on Twitter is saying that they actually project Effetti as the Bears' right guard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, there's one thing I do know for sure. He'll be able to garner and accumulate Just as many false starts at guard as he did tackle.
He's one dude closer to the center, though, this way. He can actually see the ball, like, right out of the corner of his left eye.
It doesn't seem to make that much of a difference, you know?
He did play a little right guard for the Seahawks, and I remember that not going very well.
It did not go well. That was a first-class dumpster fire.
Good luck, Bears. Yeah, they have Bobby Massey at right tackle right now.
Well, I think the other news that kind of went down that maybe we should touch on just a bit, just because I think it's interesting, was Tom Brady to the Bucs after we were done with the last show.
I talked to Anthony a little bit about this. He seems fired up about having Tom Brady on his team. He tried to convince me, Adam, mm-hmm. that the NFC South is now the best division in the NFL.
Did Anthony text you from 2008? did he use like some sort of text time machine?
No, he told me this to his face.
Really? He wasn't like a hologram from the past or anything?
We were appropriately 6 feet away. But yes, yeah. He told me this to my face that he thought the NFC South was the best
division. Presently?
Right now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, you got two guys that are a half a step from the old folks' home as starting quarterbacks.
Breeze and Brady, yeah.
Probably, you know.
One of your favorite quarterbacks in the South, Matt Ryan.
Matty Mediocre, who...
Oh, you didn't do it.
What?
He was your new Who guy.
Oh, I screwed up. You're right.
That's okay. We'll have plenty of time to practice.
Okay. So, I don't know, some guy in Atlanta who used to do something. I don't know. And then a quarterback that nearly had his leg amputated a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
That's your division,
that's
huh?
That's your set of quarterbacks in that division.
Right. Well, I mean...
Oh, but there's so many great defenses in that division. Oh, wait, no.
I mean, there's a couple solid defenses.
But Luke Kuechly retired.
Ron Rivera... I'm not counting the Panthers.
Okay.
I think the Bucs have a solid defense. I think the Saints have a solid defense.
Yeah, the Saints have gotten better. Okay.
Yeah.
They're okay.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, but they're not like a Ravens, Niners, LOB, you know, that sort of defense.
No.
Not at all. I do find Tom Brady's fit in Tampa to be interesting. What do you see this season looking like for Tom Brady?
Well, I do think that he's going to tend to struggle with the deep throwing part of the Arians offense.
Okay, thank you. That was the one thing that I wanted to really delve into, because I haven't heard one person talk about this.
I mean, Tom Brady at the end of last season with the Patriots looked like a guy who, with all his might, when he reeled up to throw a ball 40 yards down the field, looked like a guy who was, like, if you had mics on him, it probably sounded like, every time he threw that 40-yard deep ball.
See, I always imagined it to be more like one of the female tennis players who grunt before every shot, every volley, as he like throws it.
The grunt's important to get the extra power.
I know that when I watched him try to throw deep late in the season last year, I would give him a sympathy grunt as he tried to do it. And it's something that I've evolved to do.
Wasn't Tim Tebow a guy that wasn't like supposed to be able to play in the NFL because he had such a big windup?
Right.
And Tom Brady takes that kind of effort to throw the deep ball now.
Well, yeah. And he doesn't want to get hit anymore.
No. So I mean, he's falling backward. And
yeah. He's starting to do the Peyton Manning thing, or any of these great quarterbacks when they get late in their career. There comes a point where you don't want to get hit anymore, and that's when you're kind of done. That's what I've heard from all of them, where the pass rusher comes like more or less unblocked, and they just crumple to the ground. Yeah. Like that's where Tom Brady is at now. But yeah, that fit with the vertical passing game doesn't make any sense to me. That's the way Arians likes to play. Those receivers, Evans and Godwin, I mean, that's their number one trait, right? Is they're able to stretch the field vertically. So if you're Bruce Arians, Captain Ego, do you think he has Tom Brady come in and run Tom Brady's offense like Peyton Manning did when he went to the Broncos? Or does Tom Brady come in and try to run Bruce Arians' offense?
Yeah. I think it's the latter. I think Bruce Arians is going to have him running the Bruce Arians offense.
Right. I just don't see it. I think that's going to be tough for him.
I do think that they'll be better, though.
Well, I mean, he'll cut down on the turnovers. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And that'll help him. And that defense is decent. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I think the O-line is okay. I feel like they have a better O-line than they had, than he had in New England.
You know, if you think about all of the aging superstar quarterbacks that have gone to different teams, you know, late in their career, which ones have had success? Peyton Manning, Brett Favre.
Those are the two of biggest note, I think.
Would you say Joe did in KC? I'd say so. I mean, he took him to the playoffs. Yeah.
I do think that Brady could take the Bucs to the playoffs this season.
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah, they'll compete with New Orleans, and now it's going to be seven teams in the playoffs.
Oh, there's that, right. But, I mean, you get two wins a year, right, over Atlanta and Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess that'd be four wins a year right there. I mean, it's a lot like playing in the AFC East back in the day.
It's a step up. It's going to be more difficult for him.
Yeah, because he has one team to compete with instead of zero.
The Bucs actually have a really tough schedule this year. I mean, in terms of opponents.
Do they?
Yeah, let's run down the list.
I'm not up on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers strength of schedule.
No. They play Green Bay at home. They play the Chiefs at home. They play the Vikings and Saints. So those are probably the four toughest games that they'll play at home.
Okay.
And then the home games that you could probably pencil in for wins are the Chargers, the Falcons, the Panthers, and the Rams.
Mm. Okay.
Away. So they play Chicago on the road. Actually, I feel like the road schedule for the Bucs is not that difficult. Chicago, Detroit, the Broncos, Las Vegas, Saints, Falcons. So the Saints will be tough. Panthers and the New York Giants.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb. People are going to think I'm crazy, but Detroit's going to be tough next year.
Okay. I could if they have to go to the Broncos early on in the season. Broncos always seem to play well in that first or second game.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being a loss. So I don't know, 5-3 on the road.
Yeah, something like that.
That's a good road record though.
They'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah,
yeah. Be a first round loss to
whoever the two seed is.
Whoever the two seed is, and I mean I would say us, but we're going to be the one seed. So.
Yeah. No, we aren't even going to get to see Brady in the playoffs.
No.
We do get to play New England this year, though.
Feels like a good time to do that.
Who's going to be quarterback in New England?
Cam Newton.
Cam Newton still going to be the guy?
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, they have Jared Stidham.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if Cam Newton could, you know, lay off the crackhead font on his Instagram,
uh-huh.
I bet you he'd already be signed by Bill Belichick.
He would probably given up a 7th-round pick for him.
Well, I don't know that he would have. It was clear that you wouldn't have to.
No, but just so you don't have to compete with another team.
Right. You just get him in the door.
Yeah, it's not like Cam Newton has a crazy contract that he was set to make $16 million this year.
If I'm Bill Belichick, that's what I do. Maybe even draft another guy. Whatever. I mean, he's got to be just tired of the statue quarterback thing.
I think he'd take a chance.
I think you take a chance on Cam because that doesn't prevent you from drafting a guy high. I mean, if they, let's say somebody like Tua falls to his lap or, you know, something like that, maybe they like one of the guys. I watched a little more Tua the other day.
Oh yeah. You're beefing up on the quarterbacks this year.
Yeah. And there's more there. I just, the first time I looked at him, I just looked at his 2019, you know, kind of game tape.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't look at some of the past stuff that he had done.
Mm.
Just on the 2019 stuff, it was just a lot of slants and wide open guys. And you're like, eh. But, you know, you look back at some of the previous stuff, his ability to run around and then find guys was fairly impressive. So I guess it just depends on which Tua you're getting.
Yeah.
Maybe worth the risk. I think there's only one guy that's really worth a first round draft pick, and that's Burrow. And then the rest of the guys are whatever. But, yeah, I'd take Cam over any one of those college guys and Stidham.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, what, you're going to roll Brian Hoyer?
Hey, don't say anything bad about Hoyer the Destroyer.
Well, I just did, so what are you going to do about it? I mean, maybe you trade for Jacoby Brissett? now that they brought in Phil Rivers. But if I'm the Colts, I wouldn't do that.
No, I wouldn't give him up.
No, Rivers, he's been super, super durable throughout his career. He's just to an age where you worry enough that you need to have a legit backup, right?
Out of all the quarterback signings for the veterans, Rivers is the one I would have avoided between Breeze, Brady, and Rivers. I'd rather have Cam than Rivers.
Really?
Yeah. At this point, I think I'd rather have Jameis than Rivers. I think they're the same guy God, in terms of turnovers.
No.
One's just younger.
No. If Rivers still, like last year, especially towards the end, was turning the ball over a lot, but he's not as bad as Jameis.
I feel like Jameis has more upside, though.
And that might be true. I don't know. I kind of like his fit with Frank Reich. Like, I have a little confidence in that.
In terms of the quarterback fitting with the coach, that makes some sense.
And they've got a decent offensive line, so he might be able to have some time. I don't know. I've always just kind of liked Phil Rivers, so fine. It just... Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine. All right.
What do you say we move on to do better and better at life?
My do better is whoever the judge is in the Michael Kendricks case, like whoever that guy is,
yeah,
or lady, I don't know who's sitting on the bench in charge of that case, but they must be the biggest procrastinator in the entire judicial system. I don't understand this in any way, because somehow, some way, Michael Kendricks' sentencing hearing postponed yet again. Like, I don't know if they, like, come into the office for the day, and, like, the clerk comes up and it goes, okay, on the docket here, Judge, you know, for this month, we got this case. And he's like, yeah, it gets down to Michael Kendricks in sentencing. And he gets down to that one. He's like, yeah, I, you know, got a conflict with a golf game that I got, you know, a tee time that I've got set up.
Let's push that back.
Not going to work. Can we push that back another 6 months or so again? Like, what the hell are we waiting for? Like, I don't understand this in any way.
The judge, like, is a fence sitter, Adam. It's another one of your fence sitters that you dislike.
Is that what it is? He just doesn't want to make a decision on this? Yeah. Or does he just not care? Like, it feels like there's just no care. It's like, oh, yeah, that was that dumb case. I just don't want to deal with it. So it just, for whoever the judge is in that case, do better.
Well, isn't it a constitutional thing that we have a right to a speedy trial?
Yes.
Is speedy in there, or am I just making that up?
Expedient or something like that.
Yeah. I think they probably use the word speedy in the Constitution, but...
The thing is that this isn't a trial, right, at this point?
Oh, this is just sentencing. But sentence, it's part of the process.
Well, you would think, but you know how these legal people are. They'll parse things apart and, twist it to mean anything.
I feel like the guy probably wants some closure.
I want some closure.
And, you know, the farther this gets into the offseason, then the Michael Kendricks lawyers are going to be like, well, you know, could you push it back until, I don't know, maybe the end of the NFL season? Because he kind of has this job that he'd like to do.
At this point, I swear to God, just drop the whole thing. We clearly don't want to deal with it as a system. So
there should be something in place. There should be something in place for guys who play football for the Seahawks. If they're in a legal situation where they might get a little bit of jail time, if it's gone on this long, the judges, it's okay to just drop it.
Right. I mean, clearly,
I know I put in a lot of qualifiers, but that's a law that I think we could easily pass right now.
Well, let's just put it to you this way. Like, if the guy's been twisting in the wind this long and he's such a dangerous criminal that he needs to go to jail, like, and you put it off for this long, he must not be that much of a danger to the public. So what are we doing in the first place?
I mean, it's not like there's people in government right now making what would be like illegal insider trades on the stock market that people like Michael Kendricks did way, 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 way less worse than.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the only difference is that Michael Kendricks not connected with, other people of power.
Yeah. Michael Kendricks needs to run for office and then he would have been fine.
Right. You got to understand how to rob the country if you're going to rob the country in the stock market. Like, you got to become a politician, mm-hmm. take legal bribes,
yep.
do everything in your power to make the people who gave you legal bribes a bunch of money. And then in the interim, use that information and leverage that against stock trades so that you make even more money. And then you can get your golden parachute job on the board of one of these multi-million dollar corporations. And then live out your days. That's how you do it. He just screwed up. He just chose football instead.
Wow. This turned into a do better for Michael Kendricks.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're gonna crime as a politician.
Oh, it turned into kind of a sad state of commentary on our political system. I don't know if I like your do better anymore.
That's fine.
My do better, and we've already talked about them a little bit, is for the Chicago Bears. You know, we saw a statement come out before free agency started from the Seattle Seahawks that said the Seahawks continue to place the utmost importance on the health and well-being of our entire organization and search for ways to help serve and inspire our community during this unprecedented time of uncertainty. In compliance with the NFL Management Council's memo, we will withhold announcements related to personnel moves until prospective players have executed a physical examination and signed a contract. So see,
are we back to this?
We are back to this. And then I want to contrast this though, Adam, with what the Chicago Bears are doing.
Okay.
Because, you know, not only have they signed legendary former Seahawks like Jimmy Graham, Jermaine Ifedi, Barkevious Mingo, they're announcing these rather than following the NFL Management Council memo.
What does this stick in your cross
that
so
the
much?
League put out? Because the way the Bears are doing this, apparently they okay. set up a deal to where they have to make the announcements and put a little branded Snickers on every one of their tweets. And so since they can't actually officially announce these signings, they have to say per reports and referencing other reports about their own actual signings. Like, here's one. Per reports, we have agreed to terms with Jordan Lucas at Snickers, hashtag the Bears. And there's the picture of Jordan Lucas from the Chiefs with a Snickers logo in the bottom. So because they had this prior agreement with Snickers, and then the NFL decides that they can't come out and actually make the announcements, but somehow they feel they have to be kind of first, like they can't wait for the actual official announcements, like we've seen on Monday with the Seahawks making the official announcements with BJ Finney and Obwehi, and, you know, after they've had time to actually put the paperwork through and make it official, whatever the rules are with the league. The Bears have to go, and not only are they just saying per reports, they aren't even giving the dude credit who actually broke the news of the actual reports in the tweet. So for the Chicago Bears, the way they've gone out for this, and just as a Snickers branding tactic, do better.
So we have who's better at life than Skip Bayless as a positive segment, right? And then we've got do better, which is like, what the hell is this crap? Right?
Right.
I think we need a third one. because it's a positive, better at life than Skip Bayless. And then it's a do better for the people that are need to do better. I think we need a third segment that is, who cares? Why does this matter in any way? Like, so the news is going to come out one way or the other.
Yeah.
They have this agreement with Snickers. They just want to keep getting them checks. Like, and so they find a way around this stupid rule that the NFL put in that doesn't make any difference whatsoever. This doesn't affect anybody's lives in any way, shape, or form. Who cares?
Doesn't it impact the lives of the hardworking reporters that are out there actually breaking this news? And they can't be bothered to give credit to those other than to say per reports?
If you're telling me that the reporters are going to cut their teeth and make their money by being the groundbreaking reporters that bring you the news of the Jermaine Ifedi signing and a Jimmy Graham signing, then they need to be better as reporters, because those things aren't going to get you very far. Nobody cares.
If you're going to break the rules, then why not just go all out and say, hey, per us, because we're the one making the transaction and we actually know.
What difference does it make?
It makes a difference, because why would you go through why go through the extra? It's like they're just trying to you're okay with this because they're just thumbing their nose at authority and saying we're going to do this
rule.
Anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
That doesn't matter. So what? Who cares?
My team's doing it the right way, and the sucky Bears are doing it the wrong way. That's why, Adam. That's why this is important to me.
It's just in the grand scheme of the NFL, like, this just doesn't make any difference whatsoever. You just wanted to talk about Snickers, I think, is really what this all boils down to.
I'm more of a Kit Kat guy, though.
More of a Kit Kat? No, I thought you were a Reese's guy.
Yeah, but I mean, if I'm going to talk about less superior candy, then I would go with Kit Kat.
Okay, but Reese's is still at the top.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. It's like Reese's is the Bill O'Brien of candy in terms of good candy versus bad general managers.
Okay.
And then Kit Kat is probably the Ryan Pace of the challenge here.
All right. Well, I just knew that you're a Reese's guy because I remember being at my dad and sister's lake house and you opening a packed fridge full of food. And there was a Reese's peanut butter cup turned so that the end of it, not the face of it, but the end of it was sticking towards one of the drawers. And within a nanosecond, you would pick that baby out.
Yeah, fridge okay. Reese's.
Yeah.
Who's not going to notice that?
Well, not me, but yeah. But you did notice that the Bears, you know, use that terrible language that per reports. That
you know what? If they would have gone with Reese's, then it would have been in my meh at life radar segment that we're not going to do.
Meh, who cares?
Yeah.
All right.
On to better at life.
Yeah. You know what? And for some people, my better at life than Skip Bayless is going to file straight into the meh, who cares category. So it really, I mean, I guess it comes full circle, but my better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for NASA, because according to the headline here from CNN, quote, NASA fixed Mars lander by hitting it with a shovel. I love this because this is total redneck engineering at its finest on Mars. This is basically Matt Damon being a space pirate on Mars in The Martian. It's great. So
wait, how did they hit it with a shovel on Mars?
Yeah. So the Mars InSight lander, it's the one that they sent over there here just recently, lands on Mars. It does a lot of different things. You know, like it figured out that there's Mars quakes, some other stuff, but it had this probe that was supposed to like dig down through the sand and, you know, check things out like a few meters down.
Uh-huh.
Well, for whatever reason, the red planet kept burping it back out. Like it just like kind of kick it out. You'd like, it'd start to dig down and it'd be like, no, get out of here.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was because of the geology there. It's not like it was, you know,
living
a creature from Tremors or something like that. Yeah, you know, it just you know, it kept getting ejected back out. So they're like, well, what the hell are we gonna do about this?
Mm-hmm.
This is stupid. So they as a last ditch try, they took and it began the probe digging and then took the robotic arm and used it to shove the thing further down into the soil, and it worked. They basically hit it with the shovel of the robotic arm.
Oh.
And now the probe is working and, you know, burrowing as it should. So to NASA for basically doing the hit it with the hammer repair on the red planet, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I mean, sometimes it's just a universal problem solving tool.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I think they tried turning it off and on first.
Mm-hmm.
I think they tried that first. And then, you know, now they're down to, you know, well, did you hit it with a hammer?
That's step two.
Step two. It renews my faith in the fact that maybe I'd have a shot of working at the Cape, you know, and working for NASA.
You'll always have that chance.
Yeah. Because I can be the guy in the back to be like, guys,
did you try hitting it?
Yeah. We need to hit it with a hammer. Trust me. My catfish. It always sometimes works.
Yeah. My better at life this week is also not sports related.
No.
It's for Tim. One of the things, Adam, that I think we have to realize about the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
Is that there will be many unfortunate things to happen. But, you know, there's also going to be some awesome things that I think maybe would have never, we never would have been treated to them if not for this situation happening.
Okay.
Because after I've now been treated to a week of Tim, who is the head of security at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma, I know that visiting this museum in Oklahoma needs to be on my bucket list.
Okay. I mean, I've never heard the phrase visit this in Oklahoma and on my bucket list ever collide in a sentence before, but okay. Yeah.
It's just a little bit north of, it's in the Oklahoma City area, just on the north side. And I had to look it up because Tim on Twitter has been incredible. I think you're going to like this. Let's go through some of his tweets, Adam, because his very first one is him introducing himself because with the museum having to shut down, he gives kind of an introductory tweet. He says, "Hello, my name is Tim, and I am the head of security for the Cowboy." I guess this is the short name for the Cowboy Museum.
Mm-hmm.
"I have been asked to take on the additional duty of social media management while the museum is closed. I'm new to this, but excited. My team will also continue to protect and monitor the museum. Thanks, Tim. Send." Like, he typed out "send" at the end of his tweet.
Okay.
And you're going to notice, like, some common themes here with Tim's tweet.
Okay.
So he's walking around the museum. This is the hat and eye patch the Duke wore in the movie True Grit.
So now, just as a question, like, is there, like, a little video accompanying this? Or is it, like, a picture?
No, this is a picture.
Okay.
All right. So he tweets a picture. The first one is just a picture of Tim, so we know who Tim is. The second one is a picture of, and he explains it here, the eye patch and hat the Duke wore in the movie True Grit. They are part
of
our...
True Grit?
True Grit, the movie. True Grit?
The original or the latest one?
The original. The one the Duke wore. John Wayne is the Duke.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. That's right. It was Cogburn was the character's name. Never mind. Sorry.
It's okay. He says, "Lots of interesting props and clothes. I'm told I can't try it on. Hashtag John Wayne." Oh, and you have to understand, when I say hashtag, he's using the word hashtag. Like, I'll say pound sign when he's actually using a pound sign. So he types out the word hashtag John Wayne and says, "Lucas, my grandson, told me to use hashtags. Thanks, Tim." So second tweet ends with "Thanks, Tim," and he's introducing himself to hashtags. Another tweet says,
"How old is Tim the Cowboy, by the way?"
He looks like so in his picture, he probably looks like he's on the upper end of 40s. Maybe he's got a big handlebar mustache, and the tips of his handlebar mustache are gray.
Okay.
And the rest is more blondish color.
All right. So we're not talking like 60s or 70s.
No, here. I'm going to guess late 40s, early 50s.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Continue.
Next tweet, Twitter tips, please. Next tweet, sorry, I thought I was Googling that. Thanks, Tim. And these are his boots, hashtag John Wayne, again, spells out hashtag. Thanks, Tim. Next tweet, Lucas, can you read this? Remember, Lucas is his grandson.
Right.
Yeah. Another, as he's exploring the museum, we have a very cool photography exhibition right now called Dorothy Lang, Politics of Seeing, that runs through May 20, 2020. Her photographs are very moving. This is a photo of her. She looks like someone I'd like to have a beer with. Thanks, Tim. Shows one of her pictures from 1937 of the unemployment lines and says, "You know, it looks like it's going to be a tough time now, but we get through these tough times together, don't we? Thanks, Tim." "Hello, Lucas and Kiera. There's a snake in my boot."
Like, for real, there's a snake in his boot?
Well, it's a preview of this next tweet because he says, "Here are Woody and friends from Toy Story." Woody, obviously known for his quote, "There's a snake in my boot."
You're
not a Toy Story guy.
No.
"They're part of our Find Your Western exhibition, exploring the West's role in popular culture. Watch the movie with the grandkids. Tried to catch them moving, Lucas and Kiera. Thanks, Tim." "Thanks for all the tips, friends. Realize I have been doing the hashtags wrong. I need to use that pound sign from the phone. I'm learning." "Here's the costume from True Grit from 1969, courtesy of John Wayne Enterprises. Pound sign, hashtag John Wayne. Thanks, Tim."
So he combined them.
Yeah, he went pound sign and then wrote out hashtag.
Okay.
Seth in marketing said people would love to have me take some photos of our selfie stations in the Cowboy. Here's one from the rodeo gallery. Enjoy. And this picture is of literally a photo of the selfie station on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a picture of where you would stand to take the selfie to get the photo behind him. And the horse is kind of, you only see like the half cropped legs of the horse of okay. What you would be taking the selfie with. So obviously somebody told him that this was wrong. Says, didn't get the selfie station photo quite right. I get it now. Here's the selfie station in the Warhol in the West running through May 10, 2020. Thanks, Tim. And it's a photo of him taking a selfie now, but it's him getting himself in with the feet on the ground of the selfie station. So Tim has so many more tweets. Here's another one. I'm wearing a lot of hats now. Here are some hats I can't wear. They're behind glass. Seth in marketing told me I could share this web address of a virtual tour of the cowboy. It's a long address, so get a pen and paper ready. #, #, the cowboy. Thanks, Tim. And he posts the link. And here's the last one. Someone suggested I post a TikTok. It's from our Warhol in the West exhibition. Roy Rogers alarm clock, circa 1951 from the Andy Warhol Museum, Pittsburgh. #, #, the cowboy. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, the last one, the last one. That's it. That's the one that gets me there. Because I'm not going to lie, last night I was sitting drinking a couple beers, and the girlfriend was trying to explain this guy to me a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I had a hard time, number one, paying attention because it was on Twitter. And then number two, it felt a little like you kind of have to be seeing the photos and everything to like really get it.
Uh-huh.
Because she was like, this guy's incredible, like blah blah blah.
Wait, Brittany knows of Tim?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she was trying to tell me about him last night, and I'm not gonna lie, I kinda blew it off. so you gave me a little extra context, which helps, because she was trying to describe it as, so there's this guy at a museum who just tweets things as if he's talking directly to his grandson.
Uh-huh.
And that's all I got out of it. And she had a hard time like explaining it, you know, some of the things he was doing. So my question is, does Lucas ever answer back? Like, how does he interact with Lucas? Or does he do it over the Twitter thing? And then Lucas like hits him back with a text and be like, Grandpa.
Yeah.
Like, yada, yada.
Send me a text.
Yeah.
I don't see the interactions with Lucas. You know, Twitter's a busy place because their Twitter account blew up because of this. Like, mm-hmm. Their tweets were, you know, there was some interaction, but now there's like thousands and thousands of people interacting with every single tweet.
Yeah. I only have one problem with this story, and that is that the Cowboy Museum is in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oklahoma. I have a real problem with Oklahoma classifying itself as part of the West. I understand that it is west of the Mississippi, like physically, yeah, geographically speaking. I get that. I get that, you know, the Oklahoma like land grab, like that was one of the early situations where settlers came out to the West and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. If you look at the country, guess where you're not? In the West. You're smack dab in the middle of the country. When I think of cowboys, you know what I don't picture? People, you know, riding across the great state of Oklahoma. That's not where cowboys roam. You know, when I think of cowboys, I think of like Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, you know, where cowboys did cowboy things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, you're Midwesterners, guys. Like, you can't claim cowboys.
They were the ones that started moving west, and they got there, and they're like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, you're the ones that petered out early. Like, you missed all the good stuff because you're like, yeah, this is good enough.
I think it's just important having the Cowboy Museum centrally located, so that way, you know, everybody in the country can have easy access.
I think the Cowboy Museum should actually be in the West.
Yeah.
It's like Nebraska claiming the Cowboy Museum.
It's Westish.
No more than Nebraska. Do you think if Kansas is in the West?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm getting at.
But in the 1800s, people on the East Coast was like, oh, yeah, that's, ooh, Oklahoma, that's pretty far west.
Sure. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's not Arizona. It's not, you know, California.
I don't think I'd be into having the Cowboy Museum in California.
Well, no. But, I mean, it would have more merit than in Oklahoma, seemingly.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's a weird state.
All I know, Adam, is that I now want to go visit the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum, and it's all thanks to Tim. So, Tim, better at life than Skip Bayless.
All right. I'm going to have to actually try to, you know, check out this Tim stuff because you are now the second random person to bring this up to me. And not random as in, you know, my girlfriend isn't a random person to me. And you know, my good buddy from, you know, kindergarten, you're not a random person to me. But that's fairly random that the two of you
people
would...
brought up a random Twitter account.
I just wanted to clarify that in case she heard this. I'd be in trouble. You know, that random person, you know, the girlfriend.
Yeah. And me. Yeah.
And
nice,
you.
Nice how you think of us. Just as random people you happen to interact with in your life.
Yeah. I don't know. You keep talking about Twitter and stuff, so.
At NCWHM. Go follow Tim.
Go follow Tim. And I think with that.
There's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.